the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next hour, I will be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. The cover story this week in the Triangle Business Journal is called Faces to Watch in 2024. These local leaders will be among the people to watch in the Triangle's business scene this year. Before we get to the cover story, let's read the biz section. This is compiled by Dane Huffman. U-Haul says North Carolina is number three for growth. North Carolina's status as a popular destination got another boost. The Tar Heel State ranks third in U-Haul's top growth states for 2023, which tracks one-way movers using the company's vans. North Carolina's trailed only Texas and Florida. This is the fourth time in the last 5 years that North Carolina has been named a top 10 growth state. But notably, one-way U-Haul customers arriving in North Carolina fell 1% from 2022, although departures dropped almost 2% amid an overall decrease in movers. Meanwhile, Wake Forest ranked number 15 nationally among top growth cities. More changes ahead for Hillsborough Street. Hillsborough Street has always played a special role in the feel of Raleigh, especially in the stretch from NC State University to the Capitol, and now a key part of it is changing as landmarks that date to the 1960s are disappearing. The Brownstone Hotel, once one of the centers of Raleigh's political life and later a Doubletree, has been demolished at 1707 Hillsborough Street. The Brownstone featured 190 rooms and dated to 1966, and while never as beloved as the demolished Velvet Cloak, it did provide hotel space in a downtown area lacking that. Core Spaces, a national student housing developer, paid $42 million for the space in 2021. Core Spaces also acquired the Stanhope Student Apartments at the other end of Hillsborough Street in 2021. The former location of the IHOP, which served pancakes under an A-frame blue roof from 1968 to 2016, is becoming an alpaca Peruvian chicken spot, according to signs at the location. Further down, more changes underway on Hillsborough Street as the 400H building rises. Close by it, a new tower eventually will replace the circular Holiday Inn, which opened in 1969. At least the Char Grill is still standing, for now. New ownership for CBRE Raleigh. One of the largest commercial real estate brokerages in the Triangle is under new ownership. CBRE Raleigh has been acquired by the CBRE Group of Dallas. The Raleigh Group had operated as a joint venture between CBRE and an independent entity owned by partners in Raleigh and the Triad. Financial terms were not released. The deal includes offices in Greensboro and Winston-Salem. The Raleigh office dates to 2001 and ranks as the largest CRE brokerage in the Triangle, with around 35 brokers and more than 80 employees across the region. Tom Fritsch, who has led CBRE Raleigh since 2013, will remain in his role. After more than two decades of partnership, this transaction is a natural evolution of our long-standing relationship with CBRE, Fritsch says. We are looking forward to bringing the full strength of CBRE's services and resources to our clients across North Carolina's commercial real estate markets. Return fraud is a rising concern. Retailers big and small are grappling with high levels of returns. In 2023, a total of $743 billion in merchandise was returned, according to a report by the National Retail Federation and APRIS Retail. That's a return rate of 14.5%. Returns generate headaches for retailers, especially independent businesses, by requiring labor, time, and processes. But returns are causing more difficulties than normal, with return fraud on the rise. Return fraud contributed $101 billion in overall losses for retailers in 2023, the report found. For every $100 of merchandise returned, retailers will lose $13.70. The continued growth of online channels has had a significant impact on retail sales and returns, says APRIS Retail CEO Michael Osborne. One example is our tracking of claims and appeasements, which is a new category in online returns that covers reports for missed, late, or damaged deliveries, and is the fastest-growing category for return fraud. The recent holiday shopping season is expected to mean even more returns, with the report predicting a return rate of 15.4%. Of those returns, retailers expect 16.5% to be fraudulent, accounting for nearly $25 billion. Hiking in Moore County? Be sure to watch for glass pine cones hidden along the trails. A scavenger hunt for glass pine cones was such a hit last year in Moore County that it will return this spring and become an annual event. Last year, the Pinehurst Southern Pines Aberdeen Area Convention and Visitors Bureau sponsored the event in honor of North Carolina's Year of the Trail. Now CVB will again partner with glassmakers at Starworks to produce 100 glass pine cones. They will be hidden along the trails for 5 weeks starting April 22nd. Phil Wirtz, CEO of the Visitors Bureau, says organizers were stunned at the popularity of the program. The fact that word spread quickly and we saw people visiting from several states to try to find a rare glass pine cone made us realize we were onto something here, he says. Durham firm adds more clinical sites. Velocity Clinical Research is continuing its rapid expansion through its recent acquisitions. The Durham firm just picked up 5 clinical sites in Poland and 2 in Germany through 2 separate acquisitions. This expands its network to nearly 100 sites, with 17 in Germany, Poland, and the United Kingdom. Velocity says it's the largest clinical site business in the U.S. and now one of the largest in Europe. Private equity firm GHO Capital acquired the company in 2021 when it operated just 14 sites. This week's cover story, Faces to Watch. TBJ picked leaders to watch in 2023. Some were worth it, while others not so much. This article written by the editor-in-chief, Sugata Mukherjee. Just like 2022 was a monster year for the capital markets and public stocks in general, 2023 was all about inflation, higher wages and higher productivity, a runaway stock market, and whether Taylor Swift is making a dent in the U.S. economy. Nestled among the noise about the macroeconomic picture were some big deals that made national headlines, starting with Raleigh's First Citizens Bank scooping up the failed Silicon Valley Bank with assistance from federal bank regulators. Conversely, after some historic hype about how a Vietnamese carmaker called VinFast will change the economic fortunes of North Carolina, 2023 showed us we should tone down the lofty expectations created by our political leaders. Other deals during the year that come to mind include the Carolina Hurricanes signing a long-term deal with the arena landlord in exchange for hundreds of millions of dollars from public coffers. The economic impact of such a deal will impact the development of Raleigh's Blue Ridge Corridor. Raleigh also announced that the area's largest hotel would have an Omni flag with 550 rooms beside the convention center. The hotel will not open until 2027. Regarding individuals we expect to make news in 2024, we have identified 11 faces to place under the microscope as we follow their progress in the year ahead. But did we do a satisfactory job of identifying these individuals last year? Let's go through all of them and see the relevance of these picks. A great call the TBJ made last year was on Tom Dundon, the owner of the Carolina Hurricanes. Undoubtedly, we got this right. We talked about how Tom Dundon may decide to move the team should the Centennial Authority, the landlord of the PNC Arena, be unable to find public money to make improvements to the arena and be the lead booster to build sportsbook and other entertainment facilities around the arena. Ultimately, Dundon got everything he wanted, including North Carolina lawmakers making online gambling legal and the chance to build a sports book for people to gamble on football, hockey, and pro pickleball championships. Gale Force Holdings, Dundon's operating entity, has committed to develop at least 100,000 square feet of retail and dining space, 150,000 square feet of office space, 200 multifamily residential units, and a 150-room hotel. Gale Force also committed to spending an estimated $40 million on a new enclosed music venue that will seat 3,000 to 5,000 people and be adjacent to the arena. The franchise will build a $10 million sports betting lounge. The PNC Arena is home to the Hurricanes, the men's basketball team for NC State University, and concerts. Another great call concerned Tom Greco, the former CEO of Advance Auto Parts. As the CEO of the Triangle's only Fortune 500 company, Tom Greco would always be under scrutiny. But when Advance Auto's 2022 financials started wobbling, even when its competitors showed balance sheet strength, we decided to put Greco among the people to watch because it was clear he needed to turn around the company's fortunes. He failed, and now he's gone. In late February, Advance Auto announced Greco would retire by the end of 2023 for shareholders' sake. Greco should have left earlier. What we now have in Advance Auto is a giant mess. In August, the company lost its slot among the S&P 500, soon to be followed by the departure of its chief financial officer. And in November, the company announced it was laying off 400 workers. During the November earnings call, new CEO Shane O'Kelly said, "During my review of Advance, we identified the need to simplify our overall strategy while improving execution, both of which will create value. Consistent with that, we are moving forward with a sense of urgency to help stabilize the company and return to profitable growth." I call O'Kelly's observation the understatement of the year. Another great call concerned Michelle Keefe, former CEO of Syneos Health. "I hope our Faces to Watch section does not become the modern-day Sports Illustrated cover for business executives. For people not into sports, athletes, especially football, used to say that if a team or player makes the SI cover, his chances of winning become minuscule. It simply was bad luck to be on the SI cover." Following Greco comes Michelle Keefe, the CEO of Syneos Health, who took the job in April 2022, but lost it in October 2023. While discussing the $5 billion company's financials with analysts back in 2022, Keefe said the numbers were simply unacceptable. Almost a year after she made those remarks, and just months after a group of private equity players bought out Syneos for $7.1 billion, Keefe was replaced. The company made former PRA Health Sciences CEO Colin Shannon the Syneos CEO. PRA was bought out by another clinical research organization, Icon PLC, in 2021. Should we put Shannon under our scope for 2024? You read our minds. He is on the list this year. Another good call, Tim Smith and Bubba Rawl of Preston Development Company. "We would have given this pick high grades even before December as the duo's Chatham Park project kept chugging along, adding new retail, offices, and medical facilities across the sprawling 7,100 acres. And then came December. The Walt Disney Company announced a new community coming to Chatham Park designed by Story Living by Disney, a new business venture from the company. The Disney-themed community called Asteria is in the early stages of development, according to an announcement December 7th. Home sales for Asteria are anticipated to begin by 2027. Disney's first Story Living community, Cotino, is in Rancho Mirage, California, east of Los Angeles. According to the development's website, single-family home prices in Cotino are anticipated to start around $2 million. Asteria prices aren't expected to be that, but who would have believed 10 years ago that Disney would want to build a development in the Chatham County Pines? Smith and Rawl did. They built a master community in Cary's Prestonwood more than 25 years ago. Now in Chatham County, it's rinse and repeat. Once the Disney project gets going, the duo's vision of having 22,000 homes inside the park starts to become a reality. They will need a golf course, though. Here's an idea. Get McConnell Golf to build you one. The last of the good calls is Mike Landguth, CEO, Raleigh-Durham International Airport. When we placed Mike Landguth on our watch list in early 2023, traffic was already starting to turn around for RDU Airport. Passengers were up, airport eateries were doing more business, and rental car transactions increased by double digits. But we wanted to see whether RDU could add new destinations as the country comes out of the pandemic economy. Boy, has the airport delivered, with daily direct international flights to Frankfurt, Germany, and Mexico City announced in 2023, with service starting next year. RDU's global flight map is becoming more consequential after one places London, Paris, and Reykjavik, Iceland in the mix. But the availability of money for capital improvements continues to be an issue, as Landguth and his team have indicated the authority would need billions of dollars for a new runway, new rental car terminal, terminal expansion, and other smaller projects to keep up with the economic activity of the triangle. But RDU, for now, is in a good space, and so is the community it serves. In a survey released about 3 months ago, J.D. Power and Associates ranked RDU fifth best among large airports, only trailing Tampa, Orange County, Salt Lake City, and Dallas Love Field facilities. Bigger airports such as Charlotte Douglas, DFW International, O'Hare, LaGuardia, LAX, and JFK were placed in J.D. Power's mega airport category. Turning now to the mixed call, Greg Lowe, CEO of Wolfspeed. In October of 2022, the Wolfspeed CEO announced the company would build the world's largest semiconductor materials facility in Siler City that would eventually add 1,800 jobs when completed. That got our attention, and we decided to put Greg Lowe on the watch list to see if Wolfspeed will make new expansion announcements and keep its shareholders happy. Well, in 2023, Wolfspeed announced it would build the world's largest 200-millimeter silicon carbide chip manufacturing facility in Saarland, Germany, which will propel it to hit the $4 billion revenue goal by 2027. With all this talk, one would think investors would be ecstatic. They are not. On January 4, 2023, Wolfspeed stock was $70.14. On December 28, it opened at $46. Investors are growing impatient with Wolfspeed's silicon carbide ramp-up and do not believe Lowe will be able to manage these new facilities in a way that will improve margins. But if one looks deeper into the company's coffers, one would notice some customers and partners are betting that once production gets ramped up and the utilization rate hits new highs, Wolfspeed will post impressive numbers. Last year, Wolfspeed received $2 billion in prepayment from Renesas Electronics and almost $8.3 billion in design-ins for the previous fiscal year. That's impressive. But more convincing needs to be done. Lowe won't be on our watch list this year, but we will follow the company's progress. It's critical for North Carolina. A meh call was concerning Will Zimp, the CEO of Project Kitty Hawk. About 2 years ago, the North Carolina General Assembly approved a $97 million offer for the University of North Carolina system to oversee Project Kitty Hawk, a nonprofit tasked with improving online program options at the state's public universities. Zimp and his team have made some progress a year in, but more is needed for people to take notice. Zimp's team tells us Project Kitty Hawk has completed the planning and design phase and has signed two contracts with universities for online programs, NC Central University and East Carolina University, but only one program is currently operational. A year ago, Zimp indicated that the organization was negotiating actively with five universities to launch an initial batch of programs in 2023 that could reach up to 2,300 students. Zimp says that number could grow into the tens of thousands by year three or four as it partners with more universities on more programs. We are far away from tens of thousands of students so far. Time may be of the essence, though. Since the Project Kitty Hawk money comes from COVID-19 relief dollars, the project has to be dispersed by 2024 and the funds spent by 2026. Zimp and his team still have a few months left in the current fiscal year that ends, but they may have to speed things up and bring as many universities as they can on board in this calendar year for the North Carolina taxpayer to see the program is worth it. Another meh call concerned David Meeker, founder of Trophy Brewing and Carpenter Development. When we talked to David Meeker in 2022 about his plans with some of his properties in the downtown Raleigh area, 2023 looked like a busy year for him. Sohi, a mixed-use development, was finally going to break ground on Wilmington Street with about 15 restaurant and retail tenants and some office space. At last count, minimal progress has been made on that project. The other project was on the western edge of downtown Raleigh on Morgan Street called The Bend, where Meeker was planning to restore and transform three existing houses into a wine shop, coffee shop, and a bar. Meeker says construction work on The Bend started last month, and that's excellent news. What Meeker has made progress on, however, is to keep Trophy Brewing growing. In June, he announced Trophy's new location in the Five Points area of Raleigh, a giant tap room giving the brewery its sixth location. What made this expansion important is that Meeker also helped Chiti Kumar, a locally renowned chef with the James Beard finalist stamp of approval, to open a new eatery right next to Trophy called Asia. Kumar ran Garland in downtown Raleigh before closing it in 2022. Meeker remained busy as the chairman of the Downtown Raleigh Alliance. With crime and safety issues coming to the forefront, Meeker found himself part of the discussion for solutions where he has been effective. A boosted presence by the Raleigh police and a private security contractor seem to be making a difference in keeping things calm. No question it has been a busy year for Meeker. A missed call concerned Nish LeBlanc, founder of Lennox and Gray Incorporated. When we talked to Nish LeBlanc in 2022, she discussed how she wants to propel her commercial real estate firm into a powerhouse and relevant player in Durham's growth. She raised almost $30 million, purchased buildings on Durham's Main and Rigsby Streets, and even bought properties in Rocky Mount to undergo redevelopment projects. But what interested us in putting her on the 2023 watch list was that she indicated she wanted to spend 2023 building partnership opportunities and start closing deals in the $20 million to $50 million range. At the time of this writing, we cannot find a 2023 deal of that size with LeBlanc's name. Of course, let's not forget that the commercial real estate market went south fast during 2023 after the Federal Reserve continued to raise interest rates, pushing cap rates at levels almost impossible for folks to do deals and make money. When interest rates are high, cap rates tend to increase as well. That is because higher interest rates lead to higher borrowing costs, meaning that investors will require a higher return on their investment to compensate for the increased cost. And I think that led to challenging times for LeBlanc and her team. We hope 2024 brings new opportunities for LeBlanc. A blown call concerned Erkang Zheng, or Zheng, founder of Jupiter One. In 2022, Jupiter One started the year with about 17 employees. By the end of the year, the company had more than 170 workers on its payroll, a $70 million Series C capital infusion, and a $1 billion post-money valuation, becoming the Triangle's next unicorn. Of course, we wanted to keep this company under our watch, hoping even more significant things would come out of their Morrisville headquarters. The fairy tale story is currently in the process of charting its course through the dark forest. In June 2023, Jupiter One's employees base was down to under 135 workers, with the company implementing another restructuring plan. At the time, a spokesperson said the move was to ensure that resources are going to the areas that will help the company continue flourishing even in a tough economic environment. Generally speaking, 2023 has been a tough year for tech companies outside the artificial intelligence space, so maybe Erkang Zheng's long-term plan for the company is still intact as he tried to build out his technology platform with the money he has left. But he will have to raise more money soon and present finite deliverables to investors. Another blown call concerned Dean Penny, senior project executive of Craig Davis Properties. The project Dean Penny and Craig Davis Properties announced in 2022 was supposed to be transformational. The Copper District would be a 270-acre mixed-use development a few miles from downtown Clayton. The project called for swank office buildings, places to live, retail, and restaurants. In the past 12 months, we are not sure what happened to the project, but even if some progress has been made to build this out, 2023 was not the year we were expecting out of Penny. As with other individuals on the watch list who relied on the commercial real estate market, things got ugly in the macro sense as capital dried up. We hope 2024 will be a different. Clayton can use a project like this. Turning now to the 12 faces to watch in 2024. Lee Brady is the first one. She's the CEO of the State Employees Credit Union. Amid a time of transition for the nation's second-largest credit union, the industry will be watching Lee Brady, the new CEO of the State Employees Credit Union, a not-for-profit cooperative with more than 2.7 million members. Its 274-branch network extends to all 100 counties in the state, giving it plenty of touch points and eyeballs in 2024. Brady came amid a strange year for SECU as it works to implement several controversial changes, including a move to tier-based lending, a marked shift from its history of offering the same rates on loans to all members regardless of credit score. In response to the policy, the credit union ousted three of its directors earlier this year after a shareholder vote. Add in a planned separation from the local government federal credit union set to happen in 2025, and a partnership with Atlas Stark to potentially build a tower in North Hills, and that's a time of unprecedented change and controversy at SECU. And that means plenty of eyes on Brady, who took on the top spot after Jim Hayes' sudden departure this summer to lead the State Department Federal Credit Union in Alexandria, Virginia. Brady is CQ's first female CEO and a 35-year veteran of the organization, has been chief operating officer since 2021. No one understands CQ better than Lee Brady, said Chris Ayers, chair of the board of directors. I've spent my career focused on enhancing CQ for its members and their families, Brady stated. I'm excited to step into this new role and will work to further strengthen our credit union. And she's backed the tiered system introduced by Hayes. It will be up to Brady to navigate the situation, made all the more difficult by a dicey finance industry battling high interest rates and expensive deposits. CQ has seen tremendous change in recent years. Longtime CEO Jim Blaine left in 2016, followed by Mike Lord, who held the top spot for about 5 years. Hayes joined in 2021. The firm's branch network may see changes also. In October, Triangle Business Journal wrote about Atlas Stark's plans to pursue a rezoning from 3 to 20 stories for 4 parcels along Computer Drive and Six Forks Road, including property by CQ. At the time, CQ said the credit union is rethinking its office footprint amid the rise of remote work during the pandemic. The plan is to have a branch on part of the first floor of the new building. CQ had $50.5 billion in assets in October, a 2% drop from the $51.7 billion it reported last year. The next person to watch is Cindy Parlow Cohn, the president of the U.S. Soccer Federation. Chapel Hill resident Cindy Parlow Cohn will be leading the charge for the United States Soccer Federation in the critical year of 2024. Cohn, who currently serves as the girls' director for the North Carolina FC Youth Soccer Organization, had quite an impressive run as a soccer player, coach, and vice president of U.S. Soccer before becoming the organization's first female president in 2020. And unlike others who held the position before her, Cohn had yet to gain experience in business or politics. Her resume includes winning 3 national titles and 2 Player of the Year awards at UNC Chapel Hill, playing on the famous first-place 1999 U.S. Women's World Cup team, coaching Portland Thorns FC in 2013 to a National Women's Soccer League championship during the inaugural season of the league, and being inducted into the National Soccer Hall of Fame. During a difficult time for the Soccer Federation, the Memphis, Tennessee native took the helm of the Chicago-based and soon-to-be Atlanta-based organization. Her predecessor, embattled former president Carlos Cordero, abruptly resigned in March 2020 following the heavily criticized response to an equal pay and gender discrimination lawsuit filed in 2019 by 28 United States women's national team members. Then the pandemic caused widespread shutdowns, delaying the 2020 Summer Olympics in Tokyo by a year. Cohn has taken it in stride. She has achieved significant victories during her first 3 years in the position. Notably, she presided over a collective bargaining agreement in May 2022 that equalized FIFA World Cup prize money awarded to the U.S. Women's National Team and the U.S. Men's National Team. She was reelected to her post in March 2022 for a 4-year term. My first couple of years, we were looking to make sure that the ship didn't sink because I came into a really challenging situation and had to right the ship, and now we're sailing in a good direction right now, Cohn said when reelected. But the pressure is on in 2024 as the U.S. women's and men's national teams tackle the 2024 Summer Olympics in Paris. The men's national team has qualified for the Olympics for the first time since 2008. The women's national team heads to the Olympics with a new head coach hired by Cohn, Emma Hayes, after the U.S. had a dreadful performance in the 2023 Women's World Cup, losing in the round of 16 to Sweden. The women's team finished third or better in the 8 previous World Cups. Emma is a fantastic leader and world-class coach who sets high standards for herself and everyone around her, Cohn said when hiring Hayes in November. She has tremendous energy and an insatiable will to win. Additionally, in May, the 74th FIFA Congress is set to appoint the host of the 2027 Women's World Cup. In a joint bid with the Mexican Football Federation, U.S. Soccer is a contender to host the tournament. The U.S. last hosted the Women's World Cup in 2003. In 2026, it will host the Men's World Cup with Mexico and Canada. Another person to watch in 2024 is Jim Goodnight, the CEO of SAS Institute. Jim Goodnight, the founding CEO of Carey's fiercely independent analytics firm, SAS Institute, has bold plans for the months ahead. There's the additional $1 billion he's pledged to invest in artificial intelligence. and Goodnight's, who has no publicly disclosed succession plan, didn't mince words at a recent conference, telling executives in November that SAS would continue to pursue leadership in the space. And there's his very public plan to pursue a public offering. Goodnight has instructed his staff to be ready for an IPO in 2024, though the company repeatedly cautions his plans depend on what happens in the market. Stakes for the success of SAS in both efforts are high. In addition to being one of the region's largest employers, the company is the biggest taxpayer in Cary and paid $2.2 million in 2022. It's the third largest taxpayer in Wake County. Its history as a homegrown startup-turned-success story has been central to pitches as economic developers sell companies across the globe on the Triangle's prowess as a tech cluster. Goodnight and his company are incredibly intertwined, such that business leaders and elected officials say it's hard to think about one without the other. SAS has its challenges, such as slowed growth compared to some of its peers, but it's still enormous, with over $3 billion in annual sales in 2022. According to Bloomberg, Goodnight owns two-thirds of SAS and would be the biggest beneficiary of an IPO. Co-founder John Saul owns the rest. According to SAS officials, the company is evaluating options to allow employees to participate in the exit. Goodnight is a former NC State University professor who taught statistics until 1976 when he left the school with three others to form SAS. According to Forbes, Goodnight has a net worth of $8.7 billion. The next one to watch in 2024 is John Kane, the CEO of Kane Realty. Kane Realty had a busy 2023 for announcements regarding development in the Triangle, from pulling its 30-story rezoning request for North Hills to updated news on other North Hills projects to a construction start date for Downtown South to announcing a holding pattern for Downtown South due to the financial market. Having to rethink plans and navigate a tight lending market has led the company to be strategic about each move it makes. This is especially important as it has multiple billion-dollar developments underway and planned around the Triangle. These developments include the North Hills Main District, North Hills Innovation District, Rockway Raleigh and South Raleigh, the West End development in the Warehouse District, and the Downtown South Entertainment District in Raleigh. With millions of square feet under development, the year ahead could prove rocky for John Kane and his company, Kane Realty. It all depends on how the commercial real estate market shifts and whether the office market will experience a rebound. People are going to come back to the office, and it's going to turn where the employer has the leverage versus the employee having the leverage, Kane has said. Our timing is we will be delivering that space in about 2+ years out, and we're betting that by the time there will be more activity and people will be back in the office. Commercial real estate companies continue to face significant headwinds such as remote work, higher interest rates, high material costs, and a tightened financial market. Unless any of these factors change, Kane could have a challenging year in 2024. Interest rates are the only factor likely to change soon as the Federal Reserve announced it plans to cut rates 3 times in 2024, most likely a quarter percentage point at a time. While that will help, Kane Realty has said that it also needs investors becoming interested in real estate again and getting necessary funding for it to start construction on its massive Downtown South district. It's unlikely Kane Realty will start construction on any new commercial projects in 2024, not with banks tightening their standards and restricting their lending practices. While the company can hold off on starting construction projects, it needs to fill space. Kane has 600,000 square feet of office space in North Hills with very few takers. About 350,000 square feet is open and ready for tenants, while the remaining amount is set to come online in summer 2024. Those who are looking for office space are service firms, typically looking for between 5,000 and 20,000 square feet. Hooker Manning, Director of Office Leasing and Development, reported that 31,000 square feet is leased at One North Hills with another 18,000 square feet under contract. The Creative Office Building in North Hills has one potential tenant for 22,000 square feet. That's only about 20% of the office space leased up, and that's if both of those contracts close. Unless major changes occur in the office market, it isn't likely that Kane will be able to fill up even half of available space in 2024. The next person to watch in 2024 is Ted Klink, CEO of Highwoods Properties. Highwoods Properties has remained bullish on the Triangle even amid the shaky office market. The office real estate firm has continued to invest in the area, recently opening its sixth office building in the Glen Lake Office Park near Crabtree Valley Mall. Glen Lake 3, completed in October as a $95 million investment, with 23% of the buildings released and a stabilization date of 2026. Highwoods CEO Ted Klink said in the first quarter earnings call that he would love to have more activity in Raleigh on development when discussing potential tenants for the new office building. The company has five other developments underway across all its markets. Only one will stabilize in 2024, while three won't stabilize until 2026, and the last one in 2028. Raleigh has historically been one of our top two markets. Right now, there's a little bit more softness in Raleigh, Klink said in a recent earnings call. Of those developments, the company still has $270 million remaining to fund. It has funded the development pipeline via office building sales, two in Raleigh for a total of $31.7 million, and acquiring two $200 million loans. Klink has said Highwoods is hoping to sell more office buildings that are in areas where they don't have other assets. It wants to concentrate its office buildings in main areas within its markets. In addition, Highwoods is trying to brace itself for an economic slowdown by listing unsecured notes totaling $350 million. By doing this, the company said it's hoping to not have to raise capital for a few years and help pay down its outstanding debt. While Highwoods is prepping for an even softer year, its cash flow doesn't look good. Its third quarter balance sheet showed $16.9 million in cash and cash equivalents, down from $116 million in the third quarter of 2019. Unless the office market turns around, Klink could have a challenging year. The Glen Lake office park is about 74% leased, and its overall occupancy rate is 88.7%, the lowest it's been since 2013. While Klink has said he believes this is part of cyclical headwinds that hit every 8 to 10 years, it doesn't mean it won't negatively impact the company. If Highwoods is unable to sell more non-core assets and pay off outstanding debt, Klink could be looking at a year with very little cash and cash equivalents. It's a rough spot to be in if a recession or economic slowdown occurs. Interest rates coming down and changing leasing habits are two factors that would help turn the year around for Klink and Highwoods. Klink himself will tell anyone that things won't be getting any better for the commercial real estate market until 2025, at least. David Morkin is the co-founder and CEO of Bandwidth. Bandwidth is fond of calling its employees bandmates, and in a way, much of West Raleigh is a bandmate with the company, too. West Raleigh's resurgence with the Blue Ridge Corridor springing into a new chapter is buoyed by the splashy Bandwidth headquarters off Edwards Mill Road that is home to more than 1,000 employees. It's a big bet with no long-term guarantees as Bandwidth pulls workers into the office while other tech companies go in the other direction. But Bandwidth has always exuded the confidence of David Morkin, the co-founder and CEO of a company that dates to 1999. Morkin, a graduate of Oral Roberts University, earned his law degree at the University of Notre Dame and served in the Judge Advocate Division of the U.S. Marine Corps. Morkin retains a former officer's lean, confident look and believes the $100 million campus with 533,000 feet of office space and amenities such as soccer fields, disc golf, a child learning center, and an upscale barn for events will be a hit. The company was again on Triangle Business Journal's rankings for best places to work, landing at number 8 among extra-large companies in August, right when it opened the new headquarters. But despite the confidence Morkin displays on earnings calls, Wall Street is not sold. Bandwidth stock was a whopping $188.83 as recently as February 19, 2021, but opened at $14.19 per share on December 28th. And that's well below the 52-week high of $29.07. In fact, the stock dropped 27% after Morkin told analysts to expect constrained earnings during an investor call on February 23rd. The earnings call on November 3rd was rosier as Bandwidth beat the earnings per share estimate of 20 cents with EPS of 23 cents. Despite the continued choppy macroeconomic environment, we are pleased to announce that we have exceeded both our revenue and profitability guidance for the quarter and made strong progress toward our goal of growing profitability by 30% for the full year, Morgan said. He noted that business has been strengthened because bandwidth has one of the most compelling routes to the cloud and can seamlessly help companies transition to cloud-based solutions. Morgan said bandwidth has been growing its global communications with text messaging essential to conversational commerce. The company noted that its third quarter revenue of $152 million grew 5% from last year, excluding surcharges and the year-over-year effect of $7 million in cyclical political campaign messaging revenue in 2022. And, of course, 2024 is a huge political year. Morgan is also talking up AI, saying in the spring, "We believe that conversational AI will migrate rapidly to voice and that we have an incredible role to play. It sounds promising. It's essential to an emerging chunk of Raleigh, but despite the enthusiasm of bandmates, Wall Street continues to shrug." Shane O'Kelly is the CEO of Advance Auto Parts. Even before Shane O'Kelly began his first day as CEO of Raleigh's Advance Auto Parts, a stack of challenges awaited him. The Fortune 500 retailer has been in choppy water since mid-2022, along with poor quarterly financial results. Advance Auto has been removed from the S&P 500, seen its share price plummet, had its CEO and chief financial officer exit, and been hit with a class action lawsuit. O'Kelly was named the new CEO in late August and took over for Tom Greco 2 weeks later. Since he began his tenure, the company has announced plans to sell two of its businesses and lay off 400 of its workers. O'Kelly comes from his most recent post as CEO of HD Supply. He also graduated from the U.S. Military Academy at West Point and Harvard Business School. His background as head of supply company is an asset to Advance Auto, as the retailer has had problems with its supply chain management for years. But the company has more problems than just supply. Its two main competitors, O'Reilly Auto Parts and AutoZone, are performing much better. Their operating margins are well above Advance Auto's, and the two companies continue to beat quarterly earnings estimates. Investors are losing confidence. As of December 28, shares of Advance Auto stock opened at $61.31. A year prior, shares were trading at $145.23. And in 2021, a record-setting year for the company, shares were trading at $234.68. The company's financial situation, internal management problems, and the industry's strength made Advance Auto a prime target for activist investors, a path the company has been down before. Now that O'Kelly is CEO, he's tasked with righting the ship. In his first earnings call, O'Kelly announced plans to sell its Worldpac and Canadian businesses. "During my review of Advance, we identified the need to simplify our overall strategy while improving execution, both of which will create value. Consistent with that, we are moving forward with a sense of urgency to help stabilize the company and return to profitable growth," O'Kelly said. The company also announced a cost reduction program to generate at least $150 million in savings annually. A company spokesperson later confirmed that 400 employees will be laid off. O'Kelly has also been on a campaign to visit Advance Auto Parts stores nationwide and meet with employees. The company's fourth quarter earnings results and annual report set to be released in first quarter 2024 could show signs of O'Kelly's actions and further changes. Estella Patterson is the police chief of the city of Raleigh. "The year ahead will be a critical one for Raleigh as the city takes steps to repair the image of its downtown after a 2023 that was dominated by headlines about rising crime and safety concerns. The city saw two trends in 2023. The Glenwood South area continued a strong recovery from the pandemic, with restaurants, bars, and overall nightlife scene attracting big crowds on most weekends. Meanwhile, the central business district around Fayetteville Street continued to languish due to diminished foot traffic as many offices remain empty. But in both areas, crime numbers were on the rise, including drug cases and violent incidents. That put the spotlight on city officials to take action, especially Raleigh Police Chief Estella Patterson. She took the helm of the city's police force in August 2021, following the retirement of former Chief Cassandra Deck Brown. Patterson, who was born in Panama, came to Raleigh with an impressive resume. a graduate of UNC Charlotte with a master's in criminal justice from the University of Oklahoma. She served with the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police for 25 years, rising to deputy chief when Raleigh hired her away. She's also served in the U.S. Army Reserve, 1996 to 2006, and did tours in Kosovo and Iraq. And she's a graduate of the FBI National Academy. A top priority for Patterson and Raleigh was rebuilding the community's trust in the department. After the city came under fire for some of the police tactics used during the chaotic summer of 2020, an independent review recommended changes for the department. But now the focus is on old-fashioned police work. That means surging officers into problem areas and filling the department's vacant positions. The city has around 800 sworn officers, but it had about 80 open positions as of November, although that figure was down from well above 100 in 2022. The nation as a whole is experiencing a crisis in police hiring that's been exacerbated by high levels of officer retirements and quit rates in recent years. Pay is a big factor, and Raleigh is behind smaller communities in the region. For example, the starting salary for a sworn officer in Cary is $60,000, while in Raleigh it's under $55,000. We do lose some individuals to other agencies where the salaries and benefits are better than what we offer in Raleigh, Patterson said, adding that retention rates are a key focus for her department. The 2022 to 23 city budget included a $6.5 million increase for the police department, bringing the total to $130.9 million. A major issue downtown has been a rise in homelessness. Patterson says the Fayetteville Street area saw an influx of people coming in and staying after the pandemic. So one of the things we do currently is if we make an arrest, we ask them, what is their home address? Where are you from? That's public information, and we have a number of them that tell us they're from outside of Raleigh, she says. The department has a dedicated transit unit that patrols the Go Raleigh station near Moore Square with a focus on loitering and trespassing. The city has also employed private security in the area. It's basically a zero tolerance in that area, where we're seeing everything from drug deals to indecent liberties to larcenies and robberies, Patterson says. The next person the TBJ is watching in 2024 is Thomas Pike. He's the CEO of Fortrea. The Triangle added a headquarters for a multi-billion public company in 2023, and a familiar industry veteran leads it. Thomas Pike is the CEO of Fortrea, a contract research organization formed after LabCorp spun off its clinical development business as a standalone company. He previously ran another large CRO based in the Triangle, Quintiles Transnational Holdings. Pike was CEO from 2012 through 2016 when it was completed an IPO and later merged with IMS Health to form IQVIA. At Fortrea, Pike is again tasked with leading a local company through a transformational period. Fortrea was launched in July as a global CRO that contracts with pharmaceutical, biotechnology, and medical device companies across all phases of clinical development. With more than 19,000 employees globally, the company set up its headquarters on Moore Drive in Durham at what was previously a LabCorp facility. LabCorp first disclosed its plan to spin off its clinical development business in July of 2022. CEO Adam Schechter said the move would benefit customers and shareholders by creating two standalone businesses poised to accelerate growth and focus resources on distinct strategic priorities. The move led to short-term challenges for Fortrea. The company experienced a slowdown in demand from potential new customers waiting and watching the transaction unfold. Broader challenges in the biotech sector also affected the company as requests for proposals were slowed down. The major issue in the spin year was a slowdown in new RFP opportunities, probably compounded by a softer biotech environment and lack of larger new customers, Pike said during the company's first earnings call in August. Meanwhile, Fortrea has grabbed the interest of activist investor Starboard Value LP, a New York firm with a history of investing in large, high-profile companies. Starboard, for instance, has built a stake in Rupert Murdoch's media company, News Corp, and is pushing for the multi-billion-dollar media company to spin off its digital real estate assets. In a presentation at an investor summit in October, Starboard outlined Fortrea's need to improve its margins to catch up to its peers. Starboard believes Pike is equipped to enhance Fortrea's profitability. In his presentation, the firm highlights that under Pike, Quintiles improved its adjusted EBITDA margin from 11% to 15% from 2012 to 2016. Fortrea in the third quarter adjusted its cost structure to reflect the company's near-term revenue situation. Pike said during an earnings call in November, however, that CEO acknowledged that further changes are needed in the coming year. We have a lot of work to do to change this company from a division of a division with strong clinical skills and capabilities into a competitive independent CER that is the top choice for our customers and delivers results for our public investors, Pike said. We need to invest in our future while exiting arduous transition service agreements and delivering a cost structure appropriate for a clinical services CRO. Leighton Schwab is the Senior Director of U.S. Open Operations at the USGA. Moore County has been waiting for one of golf's greatest tournaments to return for a decade, and it will be on Leighton Schwab's shoulders to ensure everything goes smoothly. The UNC Chapel Hill graduate has been with the U.S. Golf Association for 18 years. He was with the organization when it last hosted the U.S. Open Golf Championship in 2014. After being appointed the Senior Director of U.S. Open Championship Operations in 2019, this year will represent the first chance for Schwab to be in charge of keeping things running at the historic Pinehurst No. 2 golf course. Beyond its importance for golf professionals, the U.S. Open significantly impacts its host regions, and Moore County is looking forward to reaping the benefits. The total economic output from the back-to-back U.S. Open and Women's Open championships in June 2014 generated more than $238 million. On top of awarding the championship to Pinehurst No. 2 this year, the USGA is demonstrating a significant commitment to bolstering its presence in Moore County in 2024. The USGA announced in 2020 that it would bring a second headquarters to the village of Pinehurst, and attendees of the U.S. Open will get to see all it has to offer. The new USGA headquarters includes a museum and visitor center, an equipment testing facility, an innovation hub, and offices. The new headquarters at the Pinehurst Resort will employ more than 50 full-time staff. The championship week kicks off with practice rounds on June 10th, and Schwab and his colleagues will limit attendance compared to past years so that fans can have a more premium experience. In 2005 and 2014, Pinehurst welcomed 40,000 to 45,000 general admission ticket holders daily. In 2024, the USGA will limit that number to 32,500 to 35,000. One thing that we've realized as an organization over the last couple of years is that bigger isn't always better, Schwab told the Pinehurst Village Council in September. Pinehurst has always been the largest attended U.S. Open we've ever had. In 2005, we had over 325,000 people that attended during the championship week. But what we've realized over the past couple of years is that we need to be giving that premium experience to the general fans that are coming to the championship. So we've actually scaled our attendance numbers down a little bit more. The demand is still certainly there. According to Schwab, all individual tent spaces were sold out at the time of his presentation, and so were several days of reserved grandstand seating. Yolanda Winstead is the CEO of DHIC. When Yolanda Winstead was appointed to the CEO post at DHIC, a nonprofit that provides homebuyer support and develops rental communities for those with limited incomes, the world was amid a pandemic. It was a time of heightened economic uncertainty and a big blow to low-income individuals and communities. Her primary focus at the time was responding to the pandemic and ensuring those in need were supported. That came in the form of rent deferrals, connecting residents with needed services, organizing food distribution, and mask giveaways. Winstead's new role was a homecoming. She served DHIC as a project manager and homeownership center coordinator from 1994 to 2001 before joining CAHEC, and she's been operating in the affordable development space for more than 25 years now. But Winstead was always looking ahead. The preservation of older properties and the plan to grow, innovate, and diversify its business lines were part of her everyday purview. Now that the pandemic is over, Winstead has a renewed focus on making housing affordable to more people in the area. The city of Raleigh reports more than one-third of its residents now spend more than a third of their income on rent or mortgage. That means, Winston says, affordable housing is a crisis across income bands. A prime concern now for DHIC, formerly Downtown Housing Improvement Corp., is how to increase and preserve the affordable rental housing stock for low-income households in Raleigh. She points to several examples the organization is currently involved with. As we speak, lease up of 164 units for seniors age 55-plus at Primavera Apartments near the intersection of Spring Forest Road and Lewisburg Road here in Raleigh is continuing, she says. We currently have properties under construction in Apex, Durham, and Raleigh that will make another 500-plus units available for seniors and families in need. We are also in the process of renovating and improving 80 units in Southern Pines. Looking ahead to 2024, Winstead will concentrate on seeing through the completion of the proposals under construction and continue to prioritize preserving and reinvesting in DHIC's aging properties to continue providing safe, quality, and affordable housing to its current residents. To that end, DHIC is poised to kick off the preservation and renovation of 364 existing units in 7 properties across Wake County early in 2024, she says. We will continue to grow our real estate development pipeline. In 2016, the city of Raleigh set an aspirational goal to create or preserve 5,700 affordable housing units over 10 years. Since tracking toward this goal began in fiscal year 2015 and 2016, the city has added or kept 3,439 units, according to Raleigh's Affordable Housing Report for fiscal year 2022 to 2023. We've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.